Lake Effect continues on 89.7 WUWM. I'm Bonnie North.
And I'm Mitch Tyke.
This song, Cinnamon Girl by Neil Young, likely brings listeners of a certain age back to a distinct point in time. It was the end of the 1960s when opposition to the Vietnam War was reaching a peak and the country seemed on the verge of coming apart at the seams.
It was a pivotal point in the life of writer Lawrence Kesenick, important enough that it provides the backdrop for his first novel called, appropriately, Cinnamon Girl. Kesenick is a Milwaukee native, and the book plays out in locations that even relatively recent transplants to the city will likely recognize. He is in town for an event at Boswell Book Company tomorrow. Thanks so much for being here.
Thank you very much. It's wonderful to be here.
Thanks so much for coming in. Do you think there is some usefulness? I mean, this novel plays out in a really tumultuous period in American history. Is there some usefulness in reexamining this particular time in the country's history 47 years later in a sort of equally tumultuous time?
I think so. I think it is interesting. And in fact, one of the things that I believe is that the roots of the division that we have now kind of started then. I mean, that's when things really started to diverge in a pretty strong way between liberal and conservative. And it seems to me it just got more and more, the division just got wider and wider. And so it's interesting to look back, you know, at why some of it started. And I think some of it is that there were certain social changes that started happening then that some people opposed then and still oppose. I happen to be one of the people that think the changes mostly are good. And so I think it's sad that a lot of people are still fighting them. But
right. Do you feel like we're fighting the same battles today in 2016?
Well, to
we
some
were?
Degree. I mean, there are different things. And one of the points I'm doing a talk at UWM on Friday. And one of the points that I'm going to make is that I think that we've made tremendous progress. I mean, we have a black president, which in that, you know, that age, you know, it would just have been unimaginable. In fact, when I was a little kid, I remember being 12 years old and reading the book Black Like Me, which was a very, you know, really taught you about prejudice. And I, at that time, was very into politics. And because Kennedy had just been elected, I was raised Catholic, so he was a great hero. So I dreamed of being president myself. And then I suddenly realized if I was a black boy that age, I couldn't dream that. It was an impossible dream. Well, it's not anymore. So that's the thing. There have been some very dramatic changes. Yet we have the Black Lives Matter movement now because they haven't changed enough. There's still a lot more work to do.
So how do the experiences of John Meyer, the character at the center of this book, square with your own from Milwaukee at the turn of the 1970s?
Well, there's the information about the student strike, the demonstrations. I was very much involved in those at the time. I just believed very strongly the Vietnam War was a bad idea. I was involved in some of the marches in the inner city. Father Gruppy, who was very prominent at the time.
There's an urban park that's sort of in need of liberation.
Yeah. Yes. Right. There are certain things reflect his experience. I mean, part of it is set at UWM where I went, and I lived on the east side after leaving home, and so it definitely reflects my experience there. But of course, a lot of things are fictionalized as well.
Well, and I want to ask a little bit about a couple of these historical events that kind of underpin the book. Mm-hmm. And you mentioned the national student strike. Mm-hmm. And this is something that people who were either not born then or certainly not old enough to remember those days might not necessarily be familiar with. What was the aim behind that strike?
Well, the idea was that we shouldn't just be going on with life as usual, that going to classes to study, I don't know, whatever you were studying, a particular subject and an intellectual level when in the real world, this intense war, the people were being drafted for a war that we didn't believe in, that we needed to confront that we needed to talk about it, that we needed to figure out whether this was right or not. And so the idea was, the aim was to shut down the regular classes and have students talking with each other and with their professors about the war and about what could be done to try to stop this war and the history of it and why it was not a good war for us to be involved in, that sort of thing. So the aim was, you know, being universities, it was educational, but it was trying to aim the education at something other than the just everyday stuff that we'd been learning.
And clearly different universities dealt with it in different ways.
Yes, some got a little bit more intense about it. I mean, I think there were a few windows broken at the library at UWM, and some violence did happen, but nothing that dramatic like in Madison. But that was a part that always disturbed me. I mean, it seemed the antithesis. We were supposedly marching for peace. You know, you don't demonstrate peace by breaking windows. And the book starts with a demonstration at Water Tower Park, which actually was not something that had to do with the war. That was just, you know, something people felt like they should be able to be there, and suddenly started closing the park down.
The police had been kicking out hippies there.
Yeah, exactly. And, you know, they were claiming it was disturbing the hospital. Well, the traffic was noisier than any noise anybody was making over there. People brought acoustic guitars and sat around, and that was about the extent of the noise. But, you know, they just didn't want the people there. There were several demonstrations there, and one of them, a night I wasn't there, got out of hand. I don't know what happened, and people just started going down Farwell and Prospect and smashing windows, and that I found very disturbing. I just didn't see that. To me, that was just vandalism. You know, there was no purpose to it.
And in the end, and I don't want to give anything away in the book here, but, you know, the National Student Strike suffers from the same thing that just about any movement does, which is, you know, different people have different priorities and the tug and pull between being a striker and being a college student.
Yes, that's right. That's right. I mean, in the end, the aim was switched from something that was nationally aimed to being aimed at, you know, getting what students wanted locally, which was credit for their classes. And I thought that was a very disturbing thing for me, because I thought, and I was paying for my own college. It was a whole lot cheaper then, but I was paying it for it for myself. But I was willing to give up those credits for this, you know, for this cause. Didn't seem like that big a deal to me, but everybody else, as soon as they found out they weren't going to get their credits, that's what the strike became about. That's what the demonstrations became about, and that was, to me, very disturbing.
Another interesting event that was going on was the controversy over the alternative newspaper Kaleidoscope,
yes,
which is a real paper. Can you give us some context about the paper and why it was a big deal? I mean, it kind of drives a wedge between John and his family.
Yes, right, right. And that does reflect my relationship with my mother. Well, you know, as things were a little more open that way, and they must have had some pictures with some nudity or something like that. I don't remember exactly. In between nudity and obscenity, my mother was very upset about those things. And they actually started they struck at the printing company. I think it was in, I forget where they were, but just northern part of the city, and they started demonstrating against them and telling people to boycott them because they were willing to print Kaleidoscope. And so there was a very direct conflict there, and that enters into the book as well. But that was kind of a typical parent-child, you know, division at that time. Sexuality in general was much more repressed, and that was one of the things that we were trying to break out of. We were trying to make it a little more of a normal thing.
To that end, did the spark for the novel come from the love story at the center of it, this complicated one between John and Claire and Tony, or were the events that formed the backdrop what you first wanted to explore and the love story came later?
No, it was really both. I mean, because to me, the love story also says something about the times. I mean, it was a much more open time. As I said, things started to open up sexually, the whole you know, open marriage idea and that kind of thing. And people were open to that kind of idea, and that subject enters into the book. So to me, it was really kind of equally balanced. I thought it would be interesting to show how these ideas that were extant at the time would affect the personal relationship, and then also how they would affect a social institution like a university in a city.
And much the way the National Student Strike sort of falls apart under its own weight, the open marriage concept kind of does that as well in
this
book.
Yes, right. I think it's a very difficult thing to make work, especially because the people who were trying to make it work were people who were raised with a very traditional idea of marriage. So you try to escape it, but it's difficult. It's very difficult, and also, admittedly, there is a reason for marriage. I mean, that commitment, I think, is a meaningful thing. So it's difficult to break free of it. I think you have to be an unusual person to be able to do that.
So I would imagine you enjoyed revisiting the music of 1969 and 1970 as you wrote this book. Did you have a soundtrack in mind as you wrote it?
That's an interesting idea. Yeah, I noticed that. Actually, one thing in the novel, I probably mentioned Santana and Crosby, Stills, Nash and Young a little too too frequently. Well, partially it's because the title, of course, comes from Cinnamon Girl, the Crosby, Stills, Nash and Young song. But, you know, those were a couple of my very favorite bands at the time. But it was an incredible time for music. My and my son, who's just turned 28, is a musician in Brooklyn, and he agrees completely. He just says, you know, there has never been an era in music like that since. It was just amazing, the amount of creativity and the high level of musical talent and quality music that was being produced at that time in rock and folk music. It was a golden era. Really was.
Well, it was a nice trip back to that era. Lawrence Kesenick, thank you so much for sharing it with us.
My pleasure, Mitch. Thank you.
Milwaukee area native and UWM alum Lawrence Kesenick is the author of a new novel, Cinnamon Girl. He'll talk about the book tomorrow evening at Boswell Book Company, and he holds a masterclass at UWM on Friday. You'll find a link to more at WUWM.com.